And we're live. You're listening to WPEA 90.5 FM Exeter. And welcome back to our third episode of this radio show. I'm Rhea. I'm one of Defying Infinity's co-hosts.
I'm Mayhol. I'm the second co-host. And today we're joined by a very special guest.
Hi, my name is Avni. I'm a freshman here at Exeter, and I'm very excited to be on this radio show. The two hosts are very cool, and I'm honored to be here.
Yeah, so just starting off with a little introduction about what we're talking about. We're going to be talking a lot more about sleep. It's definitely something very different from what we were talking about last week, which was black holes. We're really trying to aim for a variety in the topics we're discussing about, and this is something that I think a lot of students at Phillips Exeter Academy, definitely focus on and, you know, often complain about, but we wanted to talk about this not only from a scientific perspective, but also from a perspective of, like, social global healthcare. So we're going to get straight into it, and I actually wanted to start with sort of a fun game. I think that a lot of the times, and this is this applies for a lot of scientific concepts, there are lots of misconceptions about what's healthy for us and what's not. So I wanted to start with a little fun game about sleep myths. So we're just going to debunk lots of widespread beliefs about sleep to start off.
Yay.
Mayhol, do you want to... Mayhol can, like, stay out, like, the claims, and then we can guess whether they're, like, true or false.
All right. The first claim is the longest period someone has stayed awake without sleeping is 11 days. What do we think?
I think that it's longer, perhaps. Like, I feel like someone could last for longer.
I mean, low-key, I probably could, but...
Like, I can imagine just someone just, like, stacking themselves up on, like, energy drinks and caffeine and just not sleeping.
Yeah. I think it's, should I say the answer now? Or... Because I think...
Yeah.
One thing that I found interesting when I was researching this is that this didn't really happen when, like, energy drinks were, like, very, like, popular.
Yeah, or, like, when caffeine was, like... Or, like, high caffeine stuff was widespread.
Yeah, so this actual claim is true. I think it was, like, approximately 11 days in, like, 15 minutes. But potato, potato, it's the same thing. It's a little bit over a week. And this actually occurred in 1963 by 17-year-old Randy Gardner. He actually wanted to do this for a science fair. Like, he was
not just for, like, homework or something.
Yeah, he was really determined to get that first place, I guess. But some things that he noticed while he, was staying awake for long periods of time was that he was extremely nauseous, and he also faced, like, Alzheimer's symptoms, which I found really interesting. So, like, perhaps, like, some symptoms of, like, dementia and... you know, perhaps some, like, motor struggles. So it was stuff like that that I also thought was very interesting. One thing that he also noted was that citrus fruits, like tangerines and oranges, also helped. So it's stuff like that that, sort of makes us wonder what exactly can happen when these, like, extremes are finally, you know, researched.
Yeah. Citrus also, like, I'm a person who gets a lot of motion sickness. So citrus is used for that, too.
Yeah.
I mean, citrus fruits are, like, the goat. Okay, anyways, moving on. True or false? Everyone needs 8 hours of sleep.
Rhea, what do you think?
This is funny because there's actually, like, a little backstory to this. Avni was really passionate about, like, doing this topic. And not only, like, does she research on her own, but, like, she also learns a lot of stuff from the internet, so she really just wanted to tell us this. So I think Avni should say whether this is true or false.
It's very, very false. So I think one of the biggest things is that when you're, like, 9 years old or stuff, you should be getting more than 8 hours of sleep. It's about 9 to 10 hours of sleep because your brain is developing and you need a lot of energy. And the second thing is there's this idea that a lot of research has been done on considerably, like, male populations, and that women actually need considerably more sleep, especially when they're on their period. So when a girl's on their period, they should have probably 10 to 11 hours of sleep, which for most, like, high school girls, I feel like is incredibly unattainable.
Mm-hmm. I mean, look, I would take as much sleep as I can get at this point, but...
Yeah, not everyone needs 8 hours of sleep, but 8 hours is a good goal to aim for if you are below that.
Yeah. A lot of the time when people have, like, mass sleep deprivation, they sometimes, they use something called, like, direct brain stimulation. So they, like, have sometimes, so direct brain stimulation, that's essentially when you have, like, electrodes surgically implanted into your brain. And that essentially helps with dying neurons. I don't know if that's specifically used for sleep, actually, but there are a lot of, like, electrode-pertaining, like, therapies that can especially help with that. But then again, technology like that, especially for, like, high school girls, it's very unattainable. So it's stuff like that that neuroscientists and researchers really need to explore, because... we don't really have much technologies that can, you know, really help, like, put people back up on, you know, like, high levels of energy for the day when they have very little sleep.
Yeah. All right. Next question. True or false? Around 10% of people dream in black and white.
I feel like that's true, because I feel like if you have, like, something... I feel like it's, like, the whole idea of, like, people dreaming in a different language or stuff like that. It might be, like, the pertaining to the way they, like, see the world or the way they experience it. Like, the whole idea that if you dream in a language and you're fluent in it, because it's, like, one of the ways that you can kind of experience the world, perhaps, like, similar to that.
Yeah, that's a really good explanation of how it works. Apparently... a reason why some people do dream in black and white is based on, like, childhood TV shows that they've been watching. So, older generations, like, they might be exposed to, like, more dreams that are in black and white because they watch, like, TV shows and movies that were, you know, like, in black and white. So it's stuff like that that shows that environmental factors also have a big effect on, you know, like, the mysteries of dreams. Very interesting stuff.
Wait, so if I watched, like, a lot of Sesame Street when I was a child, would I dream in, like, Sesame Street characters?
I'm not sure that's how that works.
Yeah, I don't think it goes, like, into, like, very specific parts like that. I would say that, like, there have been studies that show that, like, if you have, like, dogs or cats or other pets, you're more likely to have dreams that involve those sort of things.
Yeah, like, the way that a lot of people, like, in your environment or in your dreams, just because you, like, talk with them, experience with them on a daily level.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I will say that, like, every time I get hyperfixated on, like, a new video game, I, like, start dreaming in that video game's art style.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
And right now it's Cookie Run, so it's a little disturbing, but...
a bunch of cookies in your dreams.
Yes. Alright, moving on, I think that was the last true or false question.
I only put three.
Alright, but a question to consider is, why do you think some people dream more than others? Because, like, me personally, I only have dreams, like, once in a while, but when I do, they're, like, really, like, they're so weird.
I think dreaming, like, directly interacts with our process of, like, REM sleep. So, say if someone's not getting a good... they're getting, maybe getting a good amount of sleep, but they're not getting good sleep, which means there's, like, caffeine or something in... like, they're waking up in the middle of the night. They might have different levels of dreaming just because their quality of their sleep is not as good as others.
Mm-hmm. I think also, like, genetic factors have, you know, a large deal to do with this. Like, you know, later on in this episode, we're going to talk more about, like, the neuroanatomical aspects of, like, sleep. So when we discuss that, there's a lot of stuff with, like, gene expression that can sort of, like, affect, like, how often, like, you know, like, proteins are expressed that could perhaps, like, activate REM sleep.
Also just, like, PTSD, you know, like, dreams don't always, like, dreams, but also like nightmares. That's also like the neuroanatomical side of it, where it's like PTSD is like a neurological disorder in which like people have more frequent or like vivid dreams, often nightmares.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned REM sleep, so can you elaborate like a little bit more on what that is for our listeners?
Yeah, so REM sleep stands for rapid eye movement. And it's basically like what happens when we go to sleep. I think it's the main focus of a lot of sleep studying nowadays, because it's the way we understand the cycles of basically how we enter deep sleep and how we exit out of it. And it's super duper important for the brain to process new information. Like a lot of people think that like sleep is an inactive process, but mm-hmm. our brain is like most awake and most working when we are in REM sleep. Because we're like consolidating all of our memories from today, we're fixing up any damaged like synapses, etc. Mm-hmm. Synapses are the gaps between neurons, so it's very important.
Yeah, a lot of the time while we were like talking about REM sleep when we were discussing dreaming, is that there are different stages of sleep. One sleep that we've been talking about and what Avni was discussing is REM sleep. That is the only type quote unquote sleep that involves like very vivid dreaming, but it also involves like muscle paralysis. So instead of like acting out your dreams like physically while you're asleep, like your muscles are paralyzed, so there's no acting out. You're just, you know, in bed like normal. So it's stuff like that. The other type of sleep, well, there are multiple types, but under one category, they're just called non-REM sleep, or NREM sleep. But I'd say that the main category is slow wave sleep. So, it's stuff like that where there's, like, a differentiation in, like, specific, like, bodily activities that occur in the two.
Yeah, and you mentioned, like, the muscle paralysis in REM sleep. I've actually, like, heard of that, and, like, apparently if you, like, if your brain, like, wakes up during REM sleep, but, like, the rest of your body, like, still thinks you're asleep, it's something like that, and, like, it's called, like, sleep paralysis, and essentially, like, you just see hallucinations, and, like, it's, I don't know, I've heard a lot about that, but do you know anything about that?
I don't know much about that, but there's actually something that's sort of similar to that. It's called REM behavior disorder, so that's essentially when the muscle paralysis in your body, it doesn't work. So instead of, like, you know, like, staying in bed, you're actually acting out the dreams that you're performing. So it's stuff like that where there are also, like, perhaps, like, mutational errors. Or maybe, you know, as Ethne was talking about, like, uses of, like, medication and substances. That's also a really big factor in how exactly, you know, gene expression occurs and how our sleep cycles are affected.
Well, that sounds really interesting, but we're going to have to take a quick break for our PSA. So you're listening to WPEA 90.5 FM Exeter. All right, and we are back on air. You are listening to WPEA 90.5 FM Exeter. And Rhea, if you want to pick up where we left off, or...
I want Avni to pick up where we left off, because I know that she's super passionate about this topic, so all you.
Okay, so we're talking about how, like, our brain, not a very, like, unactive thing. Well, like, our body's a not active thing, as Meho was talking about with, like, paralysis. But our brain's doing important stuff when we sleep, and that means that there's a lot of brain waves happening during sleep. So there's waves like delta waves, which are very deep sleep, that basically is, like, and there's also, like, theta waves, in which have to do with drowsiness and daydreaming. So these waves, they're present like when we're awake, they're present when we're asleep, but they're very important when we sleep because they allow us to enter like the stage of deep sleep and to really get that relaxation and also that brain restart that we need for the next day.
Yeah, and in addition to the delta and theta waves, there are also alpha and beta waves. So beta waves are associated with like concentration, critical thinking, and then alpha waves are specifically used for like relaxation and having your eyes closed. So I actually don't remember, like, the relationship of, like, the amplitudes and frequencies for each one, but there are, like, vast differences in how they are, which...
I believe that alpha and beta are 20 to 200 hertz.
I mean, like, it makes sense that beta waves are, like, more active or, like, have a higher amplitude compared to alpha waves.
Right.
Because you're getting, as you're going through beta, alpha, theta, and the delta, you're getting more into sleep and getting deeper.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, now that we're on the topic of, like, brain waves, like, what does the brain actually do when we're, like, sleeping? Or, like, how does it contribute to that?
Yeah, so... like, we've kind of heard this idea of, like, the circadian rhythm before, which is, like, this kind of 24-hour cycle that we go on that is dependent on a lot of stuff. Like, it's dependent on, like, the sun outside, as, you know, what we've been eating that day.
Mm-hmm.
But there's an area in our brain called the hypothalamus, which really controls that. And a huge thing that has to do with that is melatonin. So, like, people will take, like, melatonin supplements to help them sleep, while the hypothalamus signals to the pineal gland, which is another area in your body, to release melatonin, which can boost your levels of sleepiness when it's the time in your circadian rhythm that, like, oh, now's the regular time that I'm going to go to sleep.
Yeah, I think there are so many parts of neuroscience that, you know, we still have questions about and we're still researching. And I think that, I think Evany was mentioning this earlier, like, when people assume that, like, sleeping, your brain is very inactive, it's quite literally the opposite. There are lots of different parts of your brain that are trying to work together. So Evany mentioned the hypothalamus and the pineal gland. Within the hypothalamus, there are two very important structures, the suprachiasmatic nucleus and then the ventrolateral preoptic nucleus, otherwise known as, like, the SCN and the VLPL. I always confuse the two, but essentially the suprachiasmatic nucleus is almost like a regulator for sleep. So by releasing melatonin, it's almost like, it's like a little code that's explaining, like, to what extent should, like, your body be, like, extremely sleepy.
Yeah.
And then the ventrolateral preoptic nucleus, it almost, like, controls our sleep-wake cycles. So it utilizes inhibitory neurotransmitters called gamma-aminobutyric acid.
Yeah.
Aminobutyric acid.
Aminobutyric acid, yeah.
Yeah, so by using that, that can also be, like, a preventer for, like, specific, like, sleep cycles and circadian rhythms.
And if you go in more to, like, the muscular part of it, you have the brainstem, which is, like, going to connect your spinal cord to your actual brain, and that's what, you know, shuts down the muscle movements, leads to paralysis during REM sleep, which is, like, it's a very important thing for your muscles to have that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they're just overall, like, lots of different, like, neurotransmitter pathways for, you know, like, parts of the midbrain to communicate with parts of the forebrain and the hindbrain.
Yeah, our brain is doing stuff when we sleep.
That's right.
All right, so on that topic, like, how does sleep benefit us? Because I think one of you mentioned earlier that, like, sleeping kind of, like, helps our brain. So could you, like, elaborate more on that?
Well, Mehul, when you sleep, like, a good, like, 9 hours, how do you feel?
Honestly, I haven't experienced that in a very long time.
So, what about you, Rhea?
Okay, this is really weird, and I don't know if we have any theories on how to explain this, but I feel that ever since I've gone to high school, and especially for students who go to, like, you know, like, very, like, vigorous boarding schools, like, we are more, like, accustomed to sleeping, like, 7 hours per night rather than 9. I feel like I've gotten accustomed to 7 hours per night that I feel better in the morning when I sleep 7 hours in comparison to 9. I swear, I feel physically better.
No, she's speaking facts.
I don't really know why.
Well, okay, so we might feel physically better, but, like, is it better for our bodies?
No, but it's just, I don't know, I just found it weird to me because, like, I feel like if it was better for my body, then, like, my actual, like, sensory, like, my bodily, like, sensory fibers would, like, also portray that. Like, why wouldn't I, like, feel anything bad if I slept 7 hours? Because I feel weird when I sleep 9 hours.
Maybe because you slept too much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think sleep, I mean, like, the sensation is often different, and I feel like people have different circadian rhythms and therefore, like, have a different amount of sleep they get every day. But in terms of your body, sleep is an instrumental process of, like, no matter what you're doing. I mean, it reduces your inflammation. And, for example, like, I've, like, heard stuff like sleep increases your risk of having diabetes, of getting neurodegenerative diseases when you're older. And, you know, for people who want to be healthier and all, in any process you're trying to do, like, if you're trying to lose weight, for example, sleep is an incredible part of that that doesn't involve, like, walking on a treadmill or lifting weights or eating less food. So sleep just makes our body healthier.
Yeah, and actually, I looked a little deeper into, like, how sleep specifically benefits us, and there is one specific example with the immune system. Essentially, there are these, like, anti-inflammatory proteins called cytokines, and those essentially, there's an influx of cytokines when we have more sleep. So then the more sleep we have, the more cytokines we have, and then our immune system will be stronger and then less susceptible to, you know, like, dangerous, like, autoimmune diseases, for example. So I'd say that, I didn't look more into it, but I'd say that by using sleep, more, like, proteins are being activated in our bodies so that they can, you know, like, protect specific bodily systems.
Yeah, and I think, you know, all of us have, like, stayed up at night studying for, like, a test or, you know, just doing something. And I think what's important to remember when you're in those moments is that, like, sleep helps you consolidate memories. Like, when you're sleeping, the short-term memories you're creating, if, like, I'm memorizing facts or, like, I'm memorizing a formula for my math test, that's being consolidated in, you know, my neurons and my nerve cells and, like, the gaps between them, the synapses, to become a long-term memory, which is going to help me on my test because I want to remember my formulas on my math test, right? So sleep is an instrumental part of, like, remembering stuff, studying process, and it's great for everyone.
Yeah, that's why a lot of the time people say that if you really want to, like, help yourself with, like, memorization, actually, this is what my theater teacher said, because we have a public speaking assignment, and this first assignment, it's the first one where we actually need to memorize something. She said that if you want to memorize as fast as possible, you should try to read the stuff before bed, which proves helpful in trying to, you know, like, as Ebony was saying, consolidate memories more.
Yeah. Oh, that's, okay, that's really interesting. But, like, honestly, I have a lot of trouble, like, sleeping sometimes, and it's almost like whenever I try to sleep, and, like, I always end up sleeping at, like, 12, and it's, like,
she's out here exposing herself. Oh, my
yeah,
God.
Yeah.
Thanks, Bethel, for being so vulnerable.
Oh, it's a lot worse, honestly. But any ideas on this? Like, why could this be happening, perhaps?
I feel like that we've sort of touched on this a little bit before, and this applies with, like, substance abuse and, you know, like, alcohol abuse. Like the my answer does, because, like, when we think of, like, addictions, for example, there's not only environmental factors that affect it, there are also genetic factors. The same thing applies with sleep. Do you want to go more into that?
You know, like, first of all, it's not only about, like, the stuff that you're doing during the day, right? So, like, stuff like red-eye flights or, like, light exposure can confuse our circadian rhythms. I mean, it's a huge problem for people who work the night shift, right, and who have to sleep in the day. Like, our circadian rhythm completely is based on the sun, right, and the light that our, like, our eyes are taking. So if I'm a night shift worker and I'm working during the night and I'm trying to sleep during the day when the sun is, like, full-on power, then, like, I'm disrupting my natural circadian rhythm. But also, like, genetics. Like, there's stuff like sleep disorders that impacts the way you sleep. Like, you were talking about REM behavior disorder. I mean, that's not an environmental factor. That's something, like, a disorder that people have via genetics that definitely affects the way that they're able to sleep or experience, like, the muscle paralysis.
Yeah, and a lot of the time, especially with, like, light exposure and, you know, like, super late in, like, flights, those not only, like, affect your circadian rhythm systems, but they also, like, confuse them at the start.
Yeah.
So then you're spending more time being awake, which then results in, like, large disparities in, like, the hours that you're staying awake versus when you should have been asleep.
Yeah. I'm gonna ask you, what time do y'all sleep on the weekdays, like, on average?
I would say 11:30.
11:30. I might not ask this question to Mehul because I
let's
feel like...
Let's not.
And what time do you sleep on the weekends?
Like 11:30. Maybe 11:40.
Yeah. My weekend sleep is a lot better. I sleep at like 11 on the weekends.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think for me, when I was like, before I really learned about sleep or like started, like, I think it's become kind of like a trend or like a new area of interest.
Mm-hmm.
I would sleep at like 10 on weekdays and I'd sleep at 12 on weekends. And I think what we forget is that our circadian rhythm does not operate differently on weekends.
Right.
We can't do 5 days of this and then 2 days of that. The way to get the best sleep or to like maintain that circadian rhythm without the interruptions that you were talking about is to maintain the time that we're going to sleep every day and the time we're waking up every day. I mean, it can be slightly different, right? Like, say if my classes start 50 minutes later, that doesn't mean I have to wake up at exactly the same time. But not have huge disparities between the weekdays and weekends is like a great way to make sure that your circadian rhythm is being consistent throughout, you know, the entire week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what about like the other sleep disorders? Because like I've heard of like a few others, like for example, insomnia.
Do you want to explain what that is?
Yeah, sure. Like
I feel like you have the experience.
I do. Yeah. Okay, well, I'm not, like, actually an insomniac as far as I know, but essentially insomnia is, like, the inability to sleep or, like, having a lot of difficulty going to sleep. I'm not 100% sure, like, what causes it. I think it's just, like, it could be due to, like, many different things. But, like, one of the more common causes or, like, the cause I've heard a lot about is, like, anxiety or, like, post-traumatic stress disorder, things like that.
Yeah, and actually, just to preface before we talk about all these sleep disorders, a lot of the time when we're discussing, like, the definitive cause of, like, these sleep disorders, a lot of the time it's different for everybody.
Yeah.
So sometimes, like, insomnia, it's not only caused by, you know, like, PTSD or, like, you know, like, major depression or anxiety. Sometimes it could be caused by, like, genetic factors, which has started to become, like, a major problem for researchers because we don't really know how to, like, specify specific, like, solutions and cures and treatments for people because, you know, like, their brain chemistry is different.
Yeah, it's, like, not only genetic, right? So it's a combination of environmental,
mm-hmm.
genetic factors. Like, I'll give the example, like, another disorder that's common in terms of sleep is sleep apnea. And sleep apnea is, like, incredibly high, especially in, like, South Asian males. Like, for example, I have South Asian heritage, so my dad, he has sleep apnea, right? And he has a full-on machine, everything. So basically in sleep apnea, at least the way that I understand it or the way that he explained it to me, is that it's very hard to breathe during the whole process, and you have certain machines that are able to open your airways. And I think when it comes to that, like, stuff like sleep apnea or, like, genetic dispositions, like, not everyone's, like, disorder is the same. So, like, even when genetics contribute and give people, like, a certain ethnic group, like, you have this, like, sorry, cannot speak today, but a larger, like, risk of having this, like, is different from each person. For example, he's tried machines and he's seen that, oh, the machine doesn't really work for me, so therefore you have to take medication, and only this medication this works and not the other medication. So, like, sleep for everyone, sleep disorders or beyond, is incredibly different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, this applies also for many other sleep disorders, which, you know, like, we were able to look more into. We've talked a little bit already about REM behavior disorder, and then we've also talked about, like, sleep paralysis. Some other, like, similar, they're not actually very similar. Well, actually, this one disorder, it is similar. It's called cataplexy.
Uh-huh.
That's essentially when there's, like, a loss of muscle tone, and there's, like, a lot of, like, muscle weakness in your body while you're sleeping. And this doesn't only occur, like, during sleep, it can sometimes occur during, like, the transition periods from being awake and being asleep. And then narcolepsy, which actually cataplexy is, like, narcolepsy is essentially, like, a symptom for cataplexy. Like, they're very, like, interconnected. Narcolepsy is essentially when you have, like, lots of, like, daytime drowsiness, you know, like, you might be falling asleep during class, I don't know.
Yeah.
And then this last disorder I found, like, very interesting, and I think that, you know, like, sleep researchers, they're still doing, like, you know, like, a lot of, you know, like, digging into it. There's also, like, lots of different, you know, like, variants to, like, this specific disorder. But essentially, it's called hypnagogic hallucination, and that's when you're in a dreamlike state while you're in the day. And I've personally, I feel like this has happened to me.
Sounds like you, like, diagnosed yourself in Google or something.
I think this has happened to me, guys. And Mayhal, I think you have a story about this.
Yeah, so I was actually, like, really obsessed with, like, trying to get myself to hallucinate for some reason when I was, like, 12. So
that was, like, a passion.
Yeah, like, there was, like, I tried many methods, okay? But then I found out about hypnagogic hallucinations. I don't know if I said that right. I didn't say that right.
It's okay.
But, and I decided I'm going to try inducing it. So, I essentially laid on my bed for, like, 30 minutes straight without moving a muscle, and somehow managed to, like, start seeing things. So, yeah.
Do you remember what you saw?
It was, like, it was something like how people describe, like, sleep paralysis demons. It was something similar to that.
So, like, your body wasn't, like, moving and you were just, like, freaking out?
Well, like, it was more of, like, for the first, like, 15-ish minutes, like, I was conscious that, like, I could still move my body, right? And yeah. Then after, like, the next 15 minutes, my body, like, the rest of my body was asleep. Like, I could blink, I could see, but, like, everything else, like, I, like, physically could not move. So, I don't know if I actually induced, like, sleep paralysis. I don't even know what I did, honestly, but...
It sounds like you were just 12 and, like, doing something. So, like...
I mean, yeah, totally. Nice. Yeah, that's also true.
Yes.
Well, we're gonna have to, like, take a quick break again. So you're listening to WPEA 90.5 FM, Exeter.
Alright. Wait, guys, this is going good so far.
By the way, that actually happened.
Organ donation. Really?
Yeah.
That's, wait, that actually freaks me out.
Yeah, that's insane. Bro, sleep paralysis demons.
I think you went into non-sleep rest. Like, the stuff where you just, like, lay down.
Yeah, because I was, like, laying down and, like, I, like, slowly felt my hands getting, like, cold and stuff. And, like from my fingers.
Like, what the heck?
I also did the thing with the ping pong balls and, like, that one YouTube video, the red light video.
Oh, red light. Oh.
Yeah.
I'm trying to make my LEDs red lights. Sleep.
There's no age limit. Parents can enroll their minor children, and no one is excluded due to any pre-existing
medical. What are we doing after this? I don't think we have, like, 20 minutes of material left.
What?
Do we have 20 minutes of material left?
I can elaborate on the biohacking.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's free. It could save your life.
All right, welcome back. You're listening to WPEA 90.5 FM, Exeter. Avni, if you could start, well, no, if you could continue where we left off.
Yeah. So we talked about, like, sleep in terms of the neurological process, you know, like, about how it works in our brain. And, you know, also the problems that happen, like the disorders and why our brain tends to remove it. But, like, okay, so all this is happening, right? But, like, why should I care, you know? Like, how can I make sure that I'm getting better sleep? I think that's the whole idea of, like, biohacking. It's like, what are things that y'all done in the past to get better sleep? Other than, like, sleep earlier and stop drinking caffeine?
I always try to read before I go to bed. I think, like, exposures to, like, you know, like, blue light. I can't speak either today. large exposure to, you know, like, blue light. I mean, like, my mom always told me that it wasn't good. So I always try to, you know, like, read. I try to journal before I go to bed. Stuff like that.
So what I do is actually a little bit weird, I'll admit. But, usually to go to sleep, I, like, make up imaginary scenarios in my head.
Oh, like, induce the dreams.
Yeah, essentially.
Oh, so. I like that. Wait, I kind of do that too.
Okay, I'm not the only one. But like sometimes I just like think about something that happened. Like if someone made me like, if someone made me angry during the day, I like think about what I would have, like how I would have roasted them.
You said that's gratification.
Yeah,
that's, I love that.
And I fall asleep in like 5 minutes.
Oh,
so
damn.
Yes, it's a very good combat to like my lack of sleep.
Mm. Yeah. So like, okay. So we've already talked about like reading, which is very interesting, and you talked about like bringing up like memories of the day.
Yeah, to put it lightly.
What I do before sleeping, this is something new, is I journal. And I think what journal helps you do is, like, if I go to sleep and I'm thinking about how someone eternally wronged me or whatever, like, if I just, like, the only memory in my mind is, like, someone making me mad, then, like, that's going to keep me up. It's, like, letting out your emotions, journaling, that's, like, one way of biohacking. I mean, it's not exactly biohacking, but it's one way of getting better sleep. And I think when we talk about biohacking, we mean a lot about technology, right? So like getting sleep tracking apps or looking at like the different brain waves. Like that's something that my dad did for his sleep apnea to see what was working for him. Was he looked at sleep tracking apps to see his consistency of sleep, how deep he got. But I think that it can be misused too, but I think it's pretty good for our brains.
Yeah, and actually, after, like, noticing, like, the commonalities in all our examples, a lot of the time it's been playing with, like, ideas of, like, imagination and creativity.
Yeah.
Which I think is also, like, a very big factor to, you know, like, how, like, REM sleep dreams are, you know, like, established. So I think it's also stuff like that that, you know, perhaps can be correlated with, you know, like, circadian rhythm systems or, you know, like, you know, like drowsiness and sleep.
Wow. Yeah. No, I like the inducing dreams idea. Like,
yeah.
That's quite like
very
interesting.
Unique.
Because I think we can talk about like what are ways that like you've biohacked your sleep, like whether that mean like stop drinking caffeine at a certain time or like actually with like the neurotransmitters and the neuroscience of it all. But like a good way you can help your sleep, you know, is to chillax before bed, right? So reading, I love that. Maybe like read with like some fantasies, imagination, if that's your thing.
Yeah, I mean, I will also say like on the topic of like biohacking, something that you should not do from personal experience is like play video games before bed, because I don't want to hear it. Like at one point during the school year, I was obsessed with this other game.
Oh god.
And, well, I really appreciate you just like sharing your personal experience here. I feel like you're being vulnerable to
you're
helping.
Being very vulnerable to
yeah no, I feel like everyone at this school has like heard about my lack of sleep, but yeah, so I used to like play video games before bed essentially. Even it was like only 15 minutes if I'm being honest, but like even then it like took me so long to sleep after that. Like I would be staring up at my ceiling until like 1 a.m. so guys, don't do that.
Yeah,
don't do that.
Like blue light, that's what Rhea was talking about, you know. Mothers tell their children, do not look at screens before you sleep. It's like blue light. I feel like blue light right now is like a very heavily contended, not contended, but like fought subject, because now everyone's like, oh, but I have my blue light glasses with me, and I'm like, that's not exactly gonna help you. It's only good to, like, get off a screen, or, like, even if you can't get off a screen, get on something with, like, less blue light, or wear blue light glasses, sure. Because we talked about circadian rhythm and the sun, and blue light is kind of a simulation of the sun in a way, right? Mm-hmm. So we're telling our body that, like, oh, it's daytime, be awake, when really we just want to, like, it's nighttime, we're ready to go into a state of deep sleep and to make sure that we're ready for the next day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, like, actually a common misconception is that, like, the blue light blockers on glasses, like, actually don't block all of the blue light. It's just, like, they actually block, like, really little. And it's to the point where, like, it still helps, but, like, not enough to, like, actually make that big of an impact, like, on your sleep habits. So, no blue light before bed.
Yeah.
I love this male No blue light before bed. It's a good rule.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. These all seem like really handy strategies to, you know, almost like trick your brain into, you know, like staying awake or falling asleep.
Yeah.
What are some other like biohacking techniques that might prove to be a little bit more, you know, like ethically debated or controversial, or perhaps have like, you know, like negative side effects? What do we know? What are some examples of those?
Controversial. Okay. I don't know. I feel like, I mean, in terms of if we're talking about, like, substances, right, that might be one thing.
Yeah.
I mean, like, yeah, because, like, substances, like, I don't know. I feel like melatonin is, like, frowned upon these days.
What do you mean?
Like, because I know that, like, melatonin, like, has that reputation of, like, if you, like, take it, then, like, you have to, like, keep taking more and more if you want to, like, continue sleeping. So, it's, like, almost frowned upon because, like, you could very easily just, like, overdose on it at that point.
Mm-hmm. And, like, I feel like we have a very, like, natural sleep rhythm, right? There's, like, we want to sleep during the night and stay awake when, like, the sun's coming in our eyes, right? And I feel like biohacking can disrupt that, and it can disrupt it in a good way if we want to get better sleep, but it can also disrupt it in a pretty bad way.
Yeah, I think biohacking should definitely be used in like moderation, because there have been some studies and like research that have shown that like a lot of the time when we use like sleep data, I know that like Fitbit, like they have like sleep data things, like,
yeah,
you know, if you like wear your watch to sleep,
like those like little like fitness rings that are popular nowadays.
Oh really?
Yeah.
So stuff like that. There is a type of sleep anxiety called orthosomnia.
Ooh.
And a cause of that can also be associated with like over analyzing like biohacking data. So it's stuff like that where, like, there needs to be, like, a fine line between, like letting nature run its course in terms of, like, circadian rhythm systems, and, you know, like, to what extent should we try to alter those so that, you know, like, we get, like, the optimal, like, you know, sleeping hours we want to.
Yeah. I think there's a good way of modifying sleep without biohacking. We've talked about reading. We've talked about relaxing. Something I like to do is I don't use my bed for anything except for sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
So that the minute I am sitting in my bed, you basically like, yeah, my brain realizes that now it's time to sleep, right? Using stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or some people use calming music, you know, sleep music to kind of relax. I think it's going to research into like what type of brain waves really activate the sleep response, or like what type of like, not brain waves, but like frequencies. So people will make like frequencies of that sound. So I think biohacking doesn't always have to involve actual drugs, medicine, stimulants. It can be involved in what like Rhea was talking about before, which is tricking your brain. And tricking your brain via your behavior, via what you're doing, rather than what you're taking or what you're eating.
All right, so on that topic, like, how do we know we're sleeping well? Like, what are we supposed to see when we're sleeping well? Because, like, I think, as Rhea mentioned, like, she feels better when she sleeps, like, 7 hours. Like, what are the signs that you're sleeping better?
I think for me, like, if I've had a good night's sleep, I think it's like the basics, that you're like energized, that you're like ready to deal with the day. You know, when I FaceTime my mom, she looks at like the space under my eyes, you know, the eye bags.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, if my eye bags look a little too dark, she's like, you didn't sleep that much. And I'm like, I see where she's coming from, but I don't think that's really scientifically proven.
Yeah. I think also in terms of like long term, I'd say that like having like lesser sleeping hours, that can not only like, you know, like affect like, you know, like eye bags and, you know, like other like, you know, like smaller parts of like you know, like the physical, but it can also affect like the immune systems, like what we were talking about.
Yeah.
So in slow wave sleep, I think I touched on what slow wave sleep is a little. It's essentially like it's like how Mayhal and I were co-hosts. Like, it's also the same with like REM. REM. Can you call it REM?
They're the co-hosts of sleep.
Yeah. So in slow wave sleep, the body releases growth hormones, which are essential for muscle repair, cell regeneration, and maintaining healthy bodily functions. Do they also... Wait. I'm not sure if this is true, but in slow wave sleep, do they also release like growth cones? Is that true?
Like growth cones for new neurons?
I think.
Yeah, for like, because I think, like, so, yeah. I think if in the case that happened, I'm not sure if that's only in neurodevelopment.
I think it might be growth cones. Like, that sounds right, but I think it's more in terms of like how strong your synapses are. So like the connections between your neurons rather than new neurons.
Well, yeah, because I think for growth cones, they're essentially these proteins called like nutrients and then semaphorins, I believe. Those essentially increase growth cones on the axons so that there can be like more neuronal interaction amongst different neurons.
Yeah.
So I think it's stuff like that that can, you know, also be proof that like it can't only like energize you. It can also boost like creativity. It can boost like critical thinking. It can boost all these certain things because it can really like touch all aspects of the brain, like prefrontal cortex, temporal lobes, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And at least I was talking about how earlier like sleep decreases your risk of neurodegenerative diseases, which is like huge new area of research. And like during sleep, you know, your brain and like the other body systems that kind of help out your brain, they actually like flush out toxic waste products. So if anyone's like heard, you all know what Alzheimer's is, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like a very common neurodegenerative disease that affects a lot of people, and it's very a big deal. What it's caused by the accumulation of these proteins when they like are kind of faulty. These proteins called beta amyloid proteins, they form plaques when they're faulty, and these like form throughout your brain. And if sleep allows the opportunity for these to kind of get washed away by the lymphatic system, which is an incredibly important system in terms of like cleaning and filtering our blood.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, and what about like dreaming? Like how, like if we dream, does that mean we sleep better? Because like, I think that's something my mom kept telling me. Like she would like at one point ask me like, what did you dream about? And if I said like nothing, she'd be like, you didn't sleep well, so.
Well, I think we talked about this earlier, right? Like, wait, first of all, that's so mom. Yeah, that makes sense. But, you know, your dreams depend on, like, what you're doing. Or, like, not, I'm sorry, not what you're doing, but, like, the factors around you. Your genetic factors, your environmental factors. And I think that, like, if that many factors is in, like, changing it, then, like, it doesn't really matter, like, how do you dream to how do you sleep, like, I guess my question is, like, is there scientific research that links the two, the quality of sleep you have and, like, the dreams you have?
Yeah, actually, I'm looking at an article right now. Gotta cite my sources. This is sleepfoundation.org, and they were just discussing about REM sleep in this article in total, but they quoted that emerging research suggests that people who are woken up while dreaming tend to feel as if they were sleeping more deeply. So that, honestly, that might answer, like, the question I had initially about, like, why I tend to, like, feel better after sleeping 7 hours in comparison to 9. Correct me if I'm wrong, but does REM sleep last 15 minutes?
15 to 30,
yeah. Right. Isn't REM like a whole cycle though of like longer? I might be wrong. I don't know. My health teacher was talking about this.
I thought that REM and slow wave sleep, those like alternate during like the sleep period. So then like REM is like 15
yeah,
to 30.
10 to 15 minutes per second.
Yeah. And then slow wave sleep is I think like around like 75.
I think it becomes longer as you go further. Yeah. So it becomes, it starts out
right,
at 15,
that's true.
And it goes longer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, well, we're almost out of time here, so to wrap it up, Avni, Raya, do you have anything to say to our listeners just about sleep in general?
Would you like to start, Raya?
Read a book before you go to bed.
Oh, I love that. I would probably say, I think sleep is a very active, important process, and I know, like, society, is it really the best place to get sleep in? Like, at least for us, we have, like, a lot of work to do. So we don't, and I know, like, if you have, like, a job, it takes a lot of, you have a job, you have family, etc. Takes a lot of time. It's pretty hard to prioritize sleep.
Yeah.
So I guess my biggest feedback or, like, thing to take away is, like, do what you can. Whether that be reading a book or, you know, creating certain, like, associations. Like, this, the minute I see my bed, I'm going to sleep. Or other stuff like that. Even just, like, taking naps. Like, there's great stuff on, like, taking deep naps that leave you feeling great.
Yeah.
I think doing whatever you can to help your sleep is a small investment that can go a long way. And, you know, everybody wants to, like, feel great and, you know, sleep well.
Yeah. And if you guys don't believe Avni, which you should, you guys should believe Kobe Bryant, because I do remember there was this, rest in peace, by the way, you know, amazing person, amazing player. I remember watching this one video of him, and he had a very rigorous, schedule. I mean, his mentality was insane. And it's crazy. I mean, he had such an insane work ethic. He would, like, go to bed at, like, 11. He would wake up at 4 to train. And he even admits it. Like, his proficiency as a basketball player, especially as he grew older, it decreased even though he was working extremely hard because he had a lack of sleep.
Yeah.
That was something that he always struggled with during his career.
Einstein got, I think, at least 10 hours of sleep per day. He took, like, a good sleep and then some naps, so...
Yeah.
If you want to come up with, like, the theory of general relativity, perhaps you should sleep.
Yeah.
All right. That's it for today. You're listening to WBA 90.5 FM Exeter. Thank you for listening to Defying Infinity.